This is a Media Lab podcast. Hello there, this is Creative Block. My name is Kyle Marshall. I am the owner of Media Lab YYC, which is located in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. This is a podcast where I get to talk to artists and creative entrepreneurs. You know, we all need to do it, unless you're one of those people who likes to live on the wild side. I'm talking about wearing underwear. Myself and Tyler McCombs do have a bit of a history together, which we'll soon discover in my conversation with him. He is the founder and owner of Devin & Lang. Their mission is to make the most comfortable and functional basics around. But what does that all, like, really mean? Well, luckily, we're about to hear that story of how the business popped into Tyler's head, how he made it a reality, and what they are doing right now. So let's get into that conversation. Tyler McCombs, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Kyle, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. It's old times, right?
I know. We do know each other from before this podcast. We don't have to hide the fact that we actually know each other.
Yeah, it's so cool. I mean, like, you and I both worked. Can we talk about your history too, Kyle?
And history?
We can talk about this stuff, We worked at Apple.
We did. The non-disclosure agreement has since lapsed. So.
That's right. We can talk about this stuff now. Yeah, for like 10 years. You were at Apple. When did you start at Apple again,
Kyle? I started in September of 2008.
2008?
Yeah, 13 years almost.
13 I worked there. 13 years. Holy cow. Yeah, I was in, it was 2011, September of 2011 is when I started. Mm-hmm, so just a measly 10 years that I spent at Apple.
Only a decade?
Yeah, I know. That's it. Just one decade. That's it.
Well, here's the interesting thing, and I guess kind of the similarity that we have.
Yeah.
When in that journey within Apple did you decide, oh, I should become an entrepreneur myself?
Man, that's a really interesting question. I think that probably in year five, I did try to start another business, actually.
Okay.
Yeah. So I tried to make a company called Comb Consolidated. This is super boring, but we tried to make like employee handbooks for smaller businesses and created like custom employee handbooks that would meet small businesses' needs. And there was just too much competition. It didn't end up working out. So that didn't become a thing. But I think, you know, for me at least, to go back to the actual question of when did I think I wanted to become an entrepreneur, I think I always had some desire to try and start something of my own. I mean, the idea for Devin & Lang, you know, kind of came after that first failure. I was feeling pretty bummed out about that, obviously. But, you know, through time, basically, I was able to, you know, come to some different ideas and go, oh, you know what, like, you know, there's always just that itch that's there, I guess, right? You kind of got to go, oh, I want to try and create something. Like push something forward in some ways, I guess.
Going back to that first one,
Comb Consolidated.
Comb Consolidated.
Yeah.
You said we. Who are the we in that scenario? Oh,
I had some family members that are in the insurance business, which it's not necessarily directly related to what we were trying to do, but there was enough connections there that he had this idea. My uncle actually had this idea. He said, you know, we'd love to be able to find some electronic ways that we can bring, you know, either group insurance or handbooks and like some health and safety stuff into smaller businesses. And, you know, he went, well, you work at Apple, right? You've got some, you know, you might know a bit about technology. And, you know,
you've seen an iPad before.
I've seen an iPad before, right? But I mean, anytime someone comes to you with an idea, at least for me, I always go like, well, I'm always willing to like take it one step further, right? And go, let's pursue this idea further. If you're in an industry and you're saying, here's a solution we could potentially solve, I'm going to, you know, at the very least look into it and see if we can try and make it a thing. So we got to the point where we had a web developer. We were actually like working on the back end systems and stuff like that. And as time went on, we just kind of realized there was other companies that ended up just being faster than us, but didn't change the fact there was a lot of really cool, you know, just learnings and takeaways, right? About like how to kind of push a product forward. And I'm sure you talk about lots of different, you know, business books and stuff like that in this podcast, I think at least. But like that lean startup mentality, right? Of like having an MVP product, your minimum viable product, I hadn't read the book at the time. That was not the way that I wanted to make a product. I wanted to make sure that the product I had was like perfect before we put it out.
Right.
And that took too long, right? That someone else put a product out that was messy and then was able to continue to fix and make adjustments and make something that was better or like better faster because they got that feedback in a quicker time.
Yeah. I mean, it's that whole mentality even of like artists, I find, of like, oh, I don't want to release this, you know, short film, this picture, this painting, whatever, until mm-hmm. it's absolutely 1,000% perfect. And it's never going to be perfect. That's the hard thing that you have to wrap your head around. It's like, it's better to release something and get that feedback rather than just prolonging it and then not getting what you want anyways.
You're right. And I mean, like, I don't know, to me, like a messy song is still really good.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's something like where you hear passion, in songs. And I think about, Brandi Carlile, musician, she sang this song called The Story. And it's a beautiful song. But like at like the most passionate moment of the song, like her voice cracks.
Right.
And she elected to keep that in the song even and go, I'm not even going to do another take. Like that is the moment where you see my passion and what it is I'm trying to do and that messiness. And that's what makes that song so good to me, at least as well. Right. And I think it's an okay thing to like, you know, be able to put a bit of messiness into the work that you do because that is what makes your process human, right? And that makes it special in a way too.
Right. It always reminds me, honestly, I used to work at a bookstore years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started, you know, your idea is like, oh, you know what? Someone has messed up this table of books. So I'm going to make this perfect columns and like rearrange everything. And I had a manager who came up to me and said like, listen, it's a great instinct, but it's this really counterintuitive thing. People will not shop a book pile that looks too neat.
Really?
Because they're scared. I don't doubt it. They're scared of messing it up. So it's like, it's better to like mess up the books on the top because people are going to be more willing to grab something off the top of it. And it always stuck with me. It's like, oh, you're right. Like messiness is not a bad thing.
Yeah.
It actually encourages people to be like, oh, now I can actually interact with this.
Exactly. No, I think it's completely true.
Let's go way back in time. Well, not way back. That might be
way, way back.
I was just going to say, where were you born?
You know, Kyle, I was born in Calgary.
You're one of those people.
I'm one of those people. We're recording in Calgary now. I am in Calgary. I've lived in Calgary my whole life. I have not lived anywhere else besides Calgary. This has been like my hometown. My family is from Edmonton and Saskatchewan, so both ultimately uninteresting places as well. But I mean, Calgary is a really, really amazing city. I've lived here my whole life and it's been pretty cool. My wife, she's the one who actually is interesting because she was born in Calgary, but she lived in London and Toronto and even in the Arctic for at least eight months of her life. This is when she was a kid.
Yeah.
But she's lived all over the place and done tons of cool things. So she's the one who has the experienced travel culture, at least in comparison to me.
Maybe so. I guess what I'm curious about here then is that growing up in Calgary, do you feel that there's anything about that experience that continues to influence you?
Oh, big time. I mean, like, I think, at least for me as an entrepreneur, Calgary, I think, is a really amazing city for starting and growing a business in. Like, I have never been a part of a community that just like embraced me so quickly. Like when I first, you know, started Devin and Lang, you know, I was able to just, you know, there's a lot of amazing entrepreneurs here in the city and being able to just reach out to any of them and go, hey, I'm new to this. I want to learn a little bit.
Yeah.
Would you mind getting a coffee with me? And I reached out to Connor Curran, the guy who ran one of the co-founders of Local Laundry, the guys with the YYC sweaters,
amazing
Canadian
group,
made apparel, great company. And like within an hour of me reaching out, he was like, yeah, let's get some coffee. Let's connect. Let's meet up. And I think that sort of, you know, connection, I'm sure you can get that a lot of places, but Calgary just feels to me like an amazing city that just like embraces that. Calgary for a lot of its life has been, you know, very much an oil and gas boom and bust sort of town. Still with a big focus on entrepreneurialism, but it feels like we're in a shift right now in this city where we're kind of realizing that the future of Calgary and the future of Alberta is going beyond just oil and gas. And they're really looking for ways that they can embrace new businesses and new technologies and different things than just oil and gas. And that embracement of moving forward in you know, different sort of entrepreneurial directions, I think it's something that like, it feels palpable, it feels real. And I'm seeing so many companies that are popping up now because this is a thing. And because, you know, the entrepreneurial community here in Calgary is just such an accepting and encouraging group of people to work with.
That is something that I have discovered repeatedly on this show. But just to go to our like last episode that I recorded with Jillian Williamson, who I know you know.
Yes, I do.
She helped take photos.
She did my photos. She did some amazing photo shoots of our product. She's her and Jean-Marc are just unbelievable photographers.
Yeah, great people. We were talking about this before we pushed record, but she had the same thing. When she moved from Toronto to here, there were so many people that were willing to like meet with her and sit down with her and give her guidance. And I've had other people tell me the same thing. It's like, it's a weirdly unique Albertan thing where people are like, yeah, we can help each other out. Like, we don't have to feel like we're always in competition, where other centers like Toronto can sometimes feel like, oh, I have to keep all my trade secrets. I cannot possibly ever talk to you.
Yeah, it feels like you can be very cutthroat in different cities like that. And like, you know, in Calgary, at least, I've been very comfortable to share kind of everything that's going on, at least with fellow, you know, entrepreneurs, to go, here's the stuff that's going well. Here's the things that are challenging. And just, you know, being able to talk to people comfortably about that and get really great insights from people who have been down a similar path and who are just so excited to see you succeed. Mm-hmm. It's a really special thing to be a part of.
Yeah. Did you go to university or college at all?
I did. Yeah. So I went to Andrews University. It's a smaller school here in Calgary. Andrews University and College. And I took a degree in behavioral sciences, actually.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So like psychology and sociology. So not quite, you know, business in that sense. But my goodness, has it ever been a useful degree to have, though? Just thinking about how to understand people. I mean, in the end, that's what that degree is really about, and how do we understand people from a micro level to a macro level. And, you know, I found it really useful back when we were at Apple, right?
And being able to read people and stuff like that. Yeah.
In fact, the reason why I ended up not continuing on with that degree to do like, you know, psychology or something was because when I was at Apple as a sales specialist, I just loved having customers come in, tell me what their problems were, and then working to find a solution for them.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And the benefit of this kind of solution is I was able to get a solution they could take home today, right? And actually find that solution immediately, right? Versus the average burnout rate for a psychologist is about 6 years before they end up moving to a new career. They don't tell you that until the fourth year of university, of course. But that's what
they deposited that last check.
They're like, okay, now we can tell you. Yeah, you got 6 years before you're going to move on to something else, probably. Because, you know, in psychology, you don't see the effect of the work you do a lot of times, right? By the time the beneficial things a psychologist or therapist has done for you, you've already been able to move on and improve your life in those ways. And a lot of therapists and psychologists, they don't necessarily get to see the benefits. They just they believe the benefits are there. And I've got so much respect for the psychologists and therapists in the world. It's amazing the work that they do. But anyway, I found that like working for Apple, I was able to kind of like take that desire that I had and kind of push that, you know, into the work that I did there. And then same thing with Devin and Lang making a physical product. Like when we started the business, it's because I felt there was a need I wanted to try and solve, and I wanted to try and make a better boxer brief, which is always a silly thing to talk about, right? But like, I wanted to make better underwear, and like being able to like make that and put it out into the world and solve a problem that I felt is out there. And obviously other customers and other people have agreed with me that there was that problem we could solve. That was a pretty cool thing to do. And it just like, it scratched the itch, right?
Yeah.
Of kind of like my, you know, desires to, you know, try and help people in some way.
Well, I mean, this is a good segue. We've whetted the people's appetite out there to Devin and Lang. So you're like, what is this that they're talking about? When did that initial thought cross your brain? Like, I think I have something to do in like, the underwear industry.
Yeah. I'll tell you the idea of how we started started Devin and Lang. The company was originally, we called it Oak Apparel, OKE Apparel. Oak literally means like guys or men in South Afrikaans. I've got no Afrikaans heritage. Okay. I just really thought it was a cool name. You think about like the, you know, when you hear oak, you think of like maybe the wood and strength that comes from that and different things like that. But the idea for this Better Boxer started when my wife and I were on vacation in Hawaii. Dana's parents were taking care of our kids and we went for a date night. We were going to have this romantic walk down the beach. I ripped a hole in my boxers, Kyle. Walking on the beach. I ripped a hole in my boxers. I was wearing some premium high-end boxers that you would definitely know the brand name of.
Yeah.
And they ripped. The walk was ruined. I was like chafed and I was super uncomfortable. And I was like, I hate this. Why am I spending $35 to $40 on like a high-end pair of boxers that don't last very long for me? I was so mad about that. You know, I started doing some research. I kind of had an idea. I went, ooh, you know what? I wonder if there's some ways that we can create a design that, you know, is not going to, you know, cause, you know, chafing in your legs, right? I basically, like, the rest of the vacation was me in Hawaii in the hotel room, like, doing research on underwear brands. Because I was like, this is, like, either this already exists I'm going to find and buy these boxers because I want some boxers that are going to solve my problem so bad. Or this idea I have doesn't exist. And you know what? I've wanted to try and start a business. I've always wanted to do this. This could be that problem that we could solve. And like, let's go forward with that. While I was on that vacation, I read a really interesting book called The Millionaire Fastlane. And it's by an author, J.D. Marco or something like that. That is not his name, but Millionaire Fastlane is the name of the book. I would say the author is truly an asshole. Like, I don't enjoy this, the person who wrote this book. Like, I don't really like him as a person, I would say. Hopefully he's not listening to me talk about him in this way, but I don't like him.
He's our next week's guest, actually.
there's a part of the book that he talks about that truly influenced me in a way to figure out, like, what is a business that is going to be effective. And he breaks it down into this, like, anagram. Is that the right word? Like, you know, it's next is what it is. And each letter means something. It's an anagram, right?
No, it's not an it is an acronym.
Okay, it's an acronym. There it is. So next. So, like, the first one is there a need? Do you think there's a need for this product that you need, right? Mm-hmm. Then the E is, what is the entry point into this product?
Okay. Right?
And this was the big one for me, is what is the entry point? How difficult or easy is it to get into this industry? And the harder it is to get in, the better, actually, because that means that there can be less competition, right? To, you know, the only way, if anyone can get into something, then the only way to find true success is to be exceptional, right? Right. And, you know, boxers is something that, actually doesn't have a huge, point of entry isn't monstrous for boxers. We were able to make some designs that I think allowed us to be exceptional, but that E was a really, really important thing. The X is then, it has something to do with, like, the time of, like, you know, how much time is it going to take for you to actually, you know, bring this out and how scalable it is. T doesn't even matter. As long as you have those first, like, three, you're really golden. The book itself, like I said, it was a really great book. And at the time I was reading that and I was thinking about this idea of underwear and kind of going, if I can create some underwear that has some really unique features that's going to solve the problem that I have, that could be the need that I see. That could be the, you know, that extra thing that can kind of set my product apart. And then this is a business that I believe can be scalable and allow me to, you know, reach a large audience, right? Reach a large, you know, marketplace of potential customers or people that are interested in it.
And sorry, what year roughly would this have been?
So 2018.
For me, and maybe this is just my personality, what you just said up there sounds so completely daunting to me, only because, like, I have this idea. I think that there's something there, but then there's a then what in my mind, because what am I going to do? I'm going to go to, like, a sewing machine and try to make underwear myself. It's like, that's not going to happen. So it's like, I have to figure out how to source this, figure out who can make it, do a proof of concept.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we have companies like Mack Weldon, who's advertising on every podcast I listen to. So I don't know. Like, what was your first step?
Oh man, that's it's really, now that you say that, it was really daunting. So I mean, the next step for me was, I had this idea and I went, okay, well, the first thing I need to make sure of is that this idea doesn't already exist, right? So I started off by just doing research on other underwear companies. I couldn't find what I was looking for. And in fact, the idea shifted a lot as time went on. My original idea, Kyle, which we are not pursuing right now.
Right.
With our boxers, was actually to have, like, what I thought of, like, as thigh guards. I was sick of there being, like, a gap between, man, we're going to talk about some really intense stuff. We're talking about underwear here, people.
This is an R-rated podcast. So,
you know, we're just talking about some intimate stuff here. But, like, there, you know, I hated the fact there's, like, a gap where my, you know, where the boxers of the fabric is and where my skin is that could cause chafing and discomfort. Yeah. And that was just, like, I want to find a fix for that. So I'm like, I know I'm going to create this, like, these, like, thigh guards that are going to be built into the boxes that are going to get rid of that gap. And I started doing some research into that. I couldn't find any companies that were doing that already. So then I started doing patent research and I started looking into trying to find if patents of this idea that I have already exist. And I'll tell you what's great is the internet Kyle, is amazing. Google yeah. Patents is a thing.
Oh, wow.
Which is the easiest way to find patents. When I was first looking for patents, I was looking on the United States mm-hmm. patent application website, which is, it was built in 1989, I swear, and it has not been updated since. But Google Patents, you know, brings all those patents in. It's the easiest way to search for patents. And I spent probably a month just doing patent research. So I didn't yeah. have lawyers or anything. I just literally started looking through patents, and any idea that looked somewhat similar to mine, I would save it and add it to my list here. And while I was doing that, I mean, I don't know how to sew. I have no idea how to do it. All I had was an idea in my mind about what I was looking for. I began trying to find some fashion designers to help me turn this idea into a reality. And what we're trying to create is something that's a bit more technical than just, like, you know, adding some feathers to a jacket or something like right. that, right? So I actually started looking for fashion design schools and began reaching out to faculty members there to see if they had either students who were doing, you know, an amazing job in this sort of technical field, or if there were designers that, you know, they could point me in the right directions of. And I ended up getting in contact with Olds College yeah. in Alberta. They have a fashion design school. And while I was there, I was able to, when I was reaching out to them, they got me in contact with an amazing designer. Her name is Martina Corello. She lives here in Calgary, and she's originally from Montreal, and she has an amazing background in design. And I was able to connect with her and kind of say, hey, Martina, here's the idea that I have. Can you help me turn this into a reality? And, you know, we probably worked on our design for nearly a year, I think.
Okay.
Before, you know, we felt really good about it. And okay, so what that means is this. When you look back at, like, what this process is so far, we've had about like a month and a half of patent research where I kind of realized, okay, I think this idea is unique, and it's something that doesn't exist out into the world yet.
And did you file a patent yourself then at that point, or no?
I did not file. Okay. I did file a patent, okay. But that's the stuff, writing a patent. Do not do that on your own. That is a right. horrific experience. Unless you love writing like 30 pages of like legalese, you're right. not going to enjoy writing the patent. And you have to hire that out. And it's friggin' expensive.
I bet.
Oh my goodness. Like, you're starting, it's like $6,000 to just, like, you know, write it and send it out. And
it's like buying a house. Like,
it's just a nightmare.
Yeah. Here's $5,000 so I can sign my name. Thank you.
And think about what a patent is, right? A patent doesn't give me the right to build this thing. All it does is give me the right to sue somebody else if they do this thing,
right?
Like, it's so dumb, but you have to do it. If you have a unique idea, you have to do it. But like, what that means is the fees of starting a patent is not where the fees stop for creating a patent, right? You create a patent, and then you have to actually like enforce that patent if you see other people
right.
yeah, doing yeah. stuff. And fortunately, I haven't had to yet, but don't tempt me, people.
Exactly.
But like, you know, but that's just like, oh, it's just such a nightmare having to deal with stuff like that. But anyhow, did the research, worked with the designer. And then while we're doing that and then finding a patent attorney to help me, like, you know, write this stuff up, we're looking for manufacturers to
right.
try to source, you know, where our fabric is coming from. And, you know, we looked all over the world to try and find a manufacturer who could, you know, make our product to the quality that we wanted it to be made at, because you can get products manufactured very cheaply in a lot of places, but those are not going to be very good products all of the time. It takes about 10 months to finally find a good manufacturer who was able to take a design that was fairly technical like ours.
And where were they?
They were based in China. So
okay.
we are manufacturing in China right now. And like I said, you know, China is known for not necessarily always having great quality, but that's not the case. A lot of amazing quality stuff comes from China. You have to spend the time to find those manufacturers, though. It's an amazing process, and it's a very difficult process. I started learning Chinese, actually. So, like, I don't speak very good, but I try my best. We started with hundreds of manufacturers. We got down to probably, you know, 7 or 8 ones that we were really serious with, and began to whittle that down as time went on until we could find one that, you know, yeah, we have a good relationship with, people that we want to work with. You know, we're looking at a price point that allows us to be in business.
Right. Yeah.
But also,
were you, yeah. in the meantime, like finding these suppliers and people were going to create this, you had already made the prototypes and stuff?
We were making prototypes.
And letting people try them on and getting feedback?
I was the prototype, in the sense. So what would happen is we'd have these designs we'd want to have made. Martina would help me draw them up, and then she would be the one who's sewing these products. And we're not using good fabrics. We're not using flatlock stitching, right? Which is keeps everything flat where it should be. Because those machines themselves, a flatlock stitcher is like $50,000 to buy. Like, it's insane the price of some of this specific sewing equipment that you need.
Right.
So, anyway, we were making these things, and I'm trying them out, and Martina and I we're going to each other's offices and houses, and I try them on, and then we're making markups literally while they're on my body, seeing what stuff we need to tweak and adjust. And once we have those somewhat decent designs, we then send those designs to our potential manufacturers, getting all of them to make different samples for us and bring them our way, so we can test them out and see what's going to be good and what isn't going to be good, from a design standpoint, and also just from a quality of goods standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. One thing to know if you're looking for a manufacturer, the sample is literally the best possible quality this product is ever going to be in,
right?
Is a sample. And so if you get a sample and your sample is not very good, it's really easy to just cut the cord.
Yeah.
Because that's literally their chance to show off that they can make something really good the first time for you. And if they can't do that, then you're going to be in serious trouble. And so, throughout the time, we were able to finally find a manufacturer that was able to make our product consistently in a really great, consistent quality, basically.
I just need to break into the conversation here to thank some of the people and organizations that helped this show continue to go. First and foremost, Creative Block is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, locally grown, community supported. The Alberta Podcast Network promotes and supports Alberta-made podcasts and connects their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. This episode of Creative Block is brought to you by YEG Podfest. It's presented by Edmonton Community Foundation in partnership with the Alberta Podcast Network and LitFest, Canada's non-fiction festival. Running October 1st through 3rd, YEG Podfest will be held all online this year, so anyone can tune into the experience. Events include masterclasses with professional podcasters, panel discussions, feature interviews, and more. Some of APN's member shows will be there too, so join us for the virtual party from October 1st through 3rd. To check out the full lineup and get tickets, head on over to yegpodfest.ca. That's yegpodfest.ca. This episode of Creative Block is also brought to you by the Business Council of Alberta. Have you ever wondered what it takes to create a good life in an equally good society, one where people, businesses, and the environment can flourish? Alberta Better, a podcast by the Business Council of Alberta, is on a journey to understand what it takes to create a good life here in Alberta and how we, as Albertans, businesses, and governments can shape our society so everyone prospers. Find new episodes of Alberta Better on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. You can also listen at businesscouncilab.com/Alberta Better Podcast. That's businesscouncilab.com/Alberta Better Podcast. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Throughout this entire time, again, coming from Apple, when you first started Apple, you are told the story about the history of Apple retail,
yes,
and how everyone said this is going to fail, no one's going to come and buy computers from you, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious if that's kind of the similar thing you had in your head. Were you always thinking this is going to be a storefront, or I'm going to find partners to actually sell this product for me?
The idea was we want to create an amazing product first. That was the first thing that we needed to do to make it really amazing.
Yeah.
To us at least. And so what that meant was the storefront, a retail store, wasn't our main priority. We really wanted to have a really strong online presence. We wanted to have really strong branding, and so that way we could be, seen as a, really premium product that we are, partner with other retailers that we could work with who could, mm-hmm, show off our products. It's, who knows? I think it would still be amazing to be able to do that. Kyle, I think you and I both know, one thing Apple instilled in both of us was the attention to detail, and there being nothing more important to that when it comes down to creating something that you care about, right? I'm sure you read Steve Jobs' biography,
yes.
as did I. And, I always think about, they talk about Steve's dad, right? Mm-hmm. And how when he would make his, cabinetry and stuff, the back was always finished, right? Like he made sure that even the stuff you didn't see, you know, was cared for to the same level that the stuff you did see was cared for. And that was a really important design philosophy that I wanted to make sure that we applied to our products, right? We wanted to make sure that there was intention in every single detail that we made, whether that be the physical product itself, to the packaging that we used, to the website that we developed. We wanted to make sure that all those things were going to be, you know, to that, you know, quality standard that mattered to me. And I think obviously, you know, it matters to you too. And I think our background's a part of that, right?
Like, yeah,
that,
yeah.
You know, importance in those little details, they mean a lot.
Why Devin and Lang? Why that name?
Yeah. So like I said, originally it was called Oak Apparel.
Yeah.
We ended up losing that name because of a trademark dispute in the United States.
Ah.
So there's a company called Okeanos Swimwear, but they went by Oki sometimes. They make bikinis. And when we submitted our trademark, you know, appraisal thing, they said, no, sorry, we think that men's underwear and women's bikinis are far too similar, and that's going to confuse customers from a buying standpoint. I said, well, they don't even mean the same thing. I said, Oak literally means like guys and men. Hers is some ocean god. And they went, oh, okay, if it means guys and men, that's even another reason why we can't do it. They won't trademark names that are just words that mean things in other languages, which is another just fun fact I found out. So anyhow, Oak was off the table. Kyle, there's nothing I hate more than naming products. It is truly like one of the things that gives me more anxiety than anything, because that name, it goes with you for a while, right? At least it should. Oak didn't, but most names, you know, should go with you for a while. The idea behind Devin and Lang finally came after probably 2.5 to 3 months of just thinking about different company names. And it became somewhat simple, and it started simple, and I think we were able to evolve it into something that was pretty special to me. So Devin is actually the name of my youngest daughter. So her name is Devin A. Lang is the surname of my grandfather, Ken Lang. And, you know, those are two obviously pretty important people in my life. I care about both of them quite a bit. And it's also my oldest daughter's middle name. So she's still a part of this too. You know, the idea of Devin and Lang, and from a business standpoint, at least, kind of evolved in the sense where we want to look at apparel of the past and what made that apparel so great, and find out ways we can move that into the next generation. So, you know, when I think about what made apparel great in the past, it was built with good quality materials. It was built to last. That durability was a really important thing. And we want to be able to think about what are the new technologies and what are the new fabrics and things we can use that are going to move that into the future as well, right? And where's the future going with apparel? To me, it's sustainability, right? It's creating products that are not fast fashion. They're not going to last for only 6 months before they've got holes in them. And they're made from fabrics that are going to not ruin the environment, because the apparel industry, Kyle, is one of the biggest contributors to waste that's out there. I think we're like number two in of like all industries for like creating waste. And they just did some study where your average consumer keeps a product, an apparel product, for only 6 months before they get rid of it. Legitimately.
Wow.
6 months. That just didn't sit well with me. And so we wanted to make sure that the fabrics and the products that we're using are, you know, sourced sustainably. And so for us, we make our products out of modal, which is a beechwood fiber. It uses 20 times less water than cotton does. So when you think about like a pair of jeans, legitimately uses about 100 gallons of water to make the pair of jeans that you wear.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to use a fabric that was way more sustainable in that sense. And then the polyesters we use are recycled polyesters as well. So we're trying to figure out ways that we can make our products as sustainable as possible. And that even includes the packaging that we're trying to make as well. We've got some really exciting new packaging that we'll have to talk about later. I can't talk about right now, unfortunately. But we're doing some really interesting sustainable packaging that we have planned that I'm quite excited about, both from an environmental standpoint, and also I think they're going to just look gorgeous when they go into retail stores. And that's been a really fun process too. Like going to the creative aspect of, you know, this brand building, it has been so much fun to design packaging and design patterns and design, you know, just ways that we can make these items feel like a special thing to you, right? It's been really, really fun.
It sounds like there's not just like this business aspect to this and like research aspect, but there is that creative aspect that comes into this as well. You've done your research. You found your partner that's going to be kind of creating these.
Yes.
You discovered this name. Do you know who like your first customer was that was not like a family member? a friend or family member?
Do I know who my first customer was?
Or that moment when it's like, oh, this is not someone I know that actually bought this.
Yes, I do. I mean, like, we started off at farmers markets. We would go to farmers markets and start selling our products at farmers markets. And I don't know if I could tell you the name of the person who bought the product, but like, what I can tell you is when we had, you know, a friend refer somebody else to buy the product and then had that customer leave a review on our website that was like a positive review. That was like the highest high I've ever had. Like, it was unbelievable to be like, somebody actually likes this thing. Like, this is amazing, right? And also the time when we got it, you know, my first negative review was one of the worst days of my life.
Right.
I could not believe how crushed I was to get, you know, to get negative feedback. And obviously it just plays into your own insecurities, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so easy to look at something that you've created and see every little flaw that, you know, you perceive it may have. And as soon as somebody points out that flaw that you perceive could be there, that can potentially just like crush you, right? Mm-hmm. You feel a lot of emotions during that time for sure. I'll tell you something that was kind of funny, Kyle, that's kind of related to what we're talking about here. When we ordered our first batch of boxers, so we got 1,000 pairs that were manufactured and shipped to us. And I remember I went to the airport because we had them shipped by air at the time, and I picked them up, loaded them up into our van, and was driving them home to be stored in our basement. And I started crying. I picked it up and I was like, it's finally done. Like, I've done it. Like, I made this thing. And then probably like 15 seconds later, I'm like, oh my God, I have to sell these now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, like, it's just like you feel like
it's like the highest high, lowest low, like all at one time. Yeah.
Exactly. It's like, wait a minute, I didn't complete this. All I do is I'm at the starting line now.
Right. Yeah.
Like, this was a year and a half of like idea to reality, right? And all that I did was finally get to the point where it's like I can begin. Mm-hmm. And that was just it was a very surreal moment. And it's one of those things where I kept thinking that I was like, okay, but once we hit this milestone, like, then it'll be good, right? It's just that I had never got to that point yet where it's just like, we're good now. It's just like, we hit there. It's like, now there's that next thing that we get to do.
Yeah, what's the next thing?
Yeah, and that's both, you know, it's something that is like, it weighs on you sometimes too, but also it's like so fun and inspiring to be able to go, how can we take this one step further?
Yeah.
Right with where we're going to go. Super, super cool.
And the next thing that I think we need to drill down on just briefly here.
Yeah.
Not to be, no pun intended actually. I really didn't. But you mentioned how like originally it was like, we're going to have these guards on the side. Like, that's what's going to be our like a distinct advantage on these.
Yes.
Which is not what it is anymore. So what is it? What is it that people come to Devin and Lang then for? What is your, I guess, pitch to them to be like, oh yeah, this is something that I need in my life?
Yeah. Well, we're still making a really technical boxer. So, you know, it's funny. Part of that like original design, and you iterate and you keep making things better as time goes on, was we were able to create a pouch style boxers. So our boxers are pouch style boxers. And I think the most common brand people know of is like Saks or Beneath potentially. We've got our own unique, you know, patent pending design on our pouch that we were able to create that, you know, I think is just, it's just a more innovative design. If you look at, you know, the way that these other companies make their, I'm going to get technical on pouches for a second here, but the way that they make their pouches, they usually have like an elastic of some sort, right? That like creates the pouch walls. And that elastic, when you put the boxers on, can sometimes dig uncomfortably on your body. And I was never a big fan of that. And we created a pouch that actually, our pouch walls, it's a fabric that's folded in half. So there's no tension point like on the actual edge that like, you know, is touching your body. Sewn at the top and bottom, and that's where it creates that tension. So that wall is still created there, but in a much more comfortable way. And that piece of innovation, I think, makes just a much more comfortable boxer to wear. And then the other thing that I realized that we could do was, one of the big reasons why for me at least, I'm a bigger guy, I got big thighs. I was ripping holes in my boxers in that inner thigh area. And it's because they're all made from flimsy cotton or modal fabric that just does not last very long in high friction areas. And so we've actually made our inner thigh panels of our boxers out of a poly spandex blend of fabrics that's way more durable. It has less friction to it. And that means that and it's moisture wicking. So like that means the boxers are going to last a lot longer. So you get this comfort of a modal premium, like silky, like feeling boxer brief with the durability of what an athletic boxer would be. And we're really the only company that does that at this point in time. And we were able to, with just the way that we were able to design and continue to iterate on these boxers, we, you know, removed any of those really needs for a thigh guard. The thigh guard was there to the very end, man. It wasn't until basically the last product, one of our manufacturers made a mistake and just didn't include the thigh guard. And I we didn't use that manufacturer because they didn't follow the directions. But that like legitimate like mistake that they made, we kind of realized that, oh my goodness, our design doesn't even need this anymore because we kept solving for these other things that could just make that product that much better. We were able to kind of, you know, put this product out into the world and get feedback from that. And even now, the original Oak boxer brief that came out is not the same boxer brief as what you see today.
Yeah. Right?
We had this mantra when we started the business, and it's still there. The original slogan that we went with was, we're building better boxers through innovation and iteration, meaning that we're just constantly improving on and improving on what we're creating. We didn't want to just make something and then give it to the world and we're done, right? It's going, no, we're going to get feedback from the people that are wearing this and what they hear what people are saying and look for ways that we can continue to make this design better and better and better to make, you know, the ultimate boxer brief.
No, I love it. I think it's just a great design philosophy. And I mean this in the nicest possible way. Did not think I was going to hear the word pouch so much in this conversation. So this is, it might sound like a silly question, but like obviously you have your website that I can go and browse and find this, find these boxers. Where else can I go if I wanted to see them in person?
So a few places. COVID got in the way of a lot of our plans.
Yes.
The whole, all of last year, the plan was like, we're going to go retail heavy. We're going to start working to get into more stores. And, you know, for something happened that kept us from being able to do that as much. But in Calgary, at least, we're in a few different stores in Calgary and in Western Canada. So the Odesso Man store, Markham Mall, they've been an amazing supporter. They were the first company that got really excited about what we're doing. And we've worked really closely with them. If we talk about, you know, working with entrepreneurs that are just so supportive and want you to succeed, Abdul, I mean, and Ayaz and Lucas, those are the three owners of Odesso. They are just such supportive men. And it's just been amazing being able to work alongside them. It's been so, so cool. We're in Curated Life, which is, they have a store in the core as well as in Cross Iron Mills now. And then there's quite a few different stores, smaller stores across, like in Alberta and in BC that are stocking this as well. All of them are on our website, places you can get.
Excellent.
And then we're reaching out to out east these days. I really would love to get into, you know, Toronto and Montreal and some of those places.
They're great.
We got one store who's stocking us, Christian's Menswear in Ontario. And it's been really great to work with them, being our first step in the Eastern Canada world. But it's been really cool to do that. I mean, the big thing is, obviously, we're online on our website. And that's been the biggest place of sales for us has been, you know, through that.
And of course, you have boxers. I noticed on the website, too, of course, there's face masks that you're providing, as well as socks. Is there any thing in the future, like there's more things are going to be added into the collection?
Kyle, there's more that's coming, man.
Okay, great.
Yeah, we're working on a women's line right now, actually.
Excellent.
Of basics apparel. So I'm hoping that it's happening. September, we should be launching our women's line. So we're going to have our first two pairs of women's briefs that are going to be coming out. And I'm so excited for them. The feedback that we've had on them has been phenomenal too. And it's one of those funny things where like my wife kept taking my boxers and sleeping in them and going, why can't you just make these for me?
Yeah.
And we kind of went, well, why can't we? You know, let's make this happen. You know, there's 50% of the market that we're not connecting with
right now.
That we could probably engage with in one way or another.
Cool. I guess kind of just to wrap things up here, on this entrepreneurial journey that you went on, was there something that you thought was going to be easy but turned hard? And conversely, was there something that you thought was going to be super hard but was actually easy?
Oh, man. That's so interesting. I mean, like everything is harder than you think it's going to be.
Yeah. Everything takes longer than you think it's going to.
It always takes longer than you think it's going to take, obviously. Dealing with manufacturers was easier than I anticipated it was going to be, at least with overseas manufacturers in places like China. Like Alibaba, there's nothing simpler than like trying to find manufacturers online nowadays. It's so easy to find manufacturers. Finding good manufacturers, on the other hand, is where the process is. But that was actually way simpler than I anticipated it would be. I think the thing that was harder than I thought it was going to be was marketing the product. And just like you've got something that you feel is exceptional, right? And really trying to, you know, grow that off the ground when you don't have the ability to network because, you know, there's a pandemic going on. That definitely was something that was a bit harder than I thought it was going to be. It took a lot of time and work to really build that brand recognition off the, you know, from where it was, right? We still have a long ways to go still too, right? But that was something that I found to be a bit more challenging. And just like the idea that like marketing and building a brand is as important as building an amazing product. Like, that's the thing. You can have the best product in the world, but if nobody knows about it, you're not going to sell it.
Right.
And so, you know, I focused so much on building that product and trying to make an amazing product. I didn't think about, I just kind of assumed the brand would build itself because of that. And that couldn't be further from the truth. And that's why I'm so excited to be working with, you know, great marketing, you know, partners, right? Mm-hmm. I know you work with, you know, Mike and Mitzi from Arcade Studios. We're working with them right now too. And it's been just, you know, amazing to work with them and work with these people who go, no, no, we get marketing. We're gonna work with you.
Yeah.
We've got the right product. Let's build it together, right? And I think that collaboration to me is just, that's the only way you can really grow and succeed in a lot of these businesses.
I love it. So if people, or I should say, thank you so much for joining me here today, Tyler. This has been great. If people wanted to see what you're up to, follow you online, what are the easy ways to do so?
So I would say reach out to me on LinkedIn. That's probably one of the best ways to reach out to me these days. I think I'm just like Tyler McCombs is what my LinkedIn profile is. I have Twitter at Tyler J. McCombs. I'm barely on it, but I am there. And I believe I'm also on Instagram at Tyler J. McCombs as well. But, you know, LinkedIn's probably the best place to get a hold of me. And great. I am always interested in talking with just people in general, just about whatever. But
yeah.
Like, if you want to talk about business or growing a company, what that looks like, I love talking about this stuff. And I'm very interested in chatting with you about that. So, yeah, reach out anytime.
Does Devin and Lang have any, like, socials themselves?
Yes, we do. Yeah. So when it comes down to reaching out to Devin and Lang, you want to check us out at Devin and Lang on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, pretty much anything.
Yeah.
We're just at Devin just and Lang. And so make sure it's not the plus sign, it is Devin and Lang. And you can reach out to us anytime there too.
Perfect. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Thank you, of course, to the Alberta Podcast Network, to the YEG Podfest, and to the Business Council of Alberta this week. If you have suggestions for people you'd like me to talk to, even if that's you, please send those to info@medialabyyc.com. Let other people know if you enjoy it. We'll be back again in a couple of weeks. Have a great day.